Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A new report out on the finances of Social Security and Medicare. What Delta Airlines did to get workers vaccinated, and boy, did it work. Modernizing unemployment insurance, what our Labor Department is doing. And today on the show, the latest from the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO and the Lima, Ohio building trades trying to save jobs. Welcome to the Wednesday, September 1st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Well, we have two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off in a few minutes with Rick Bloomingdale. Rick's been on the show before, had him on, I'd say, about 3-4 months ago. And this is part of a series checking in with various states and the heads of their labor federations, find out what's going on in those states. Rick's been president for 11 years now. In fact, his career began back in 1977, his career in labor, I should say, and that started with AFSCME, from a project staff rep of Local 449 to AFSCME International to state political legislative director for Council 13. And all through his life, Rick has worked tirelessly to ensure workers' rights. In fact, he was a driving force in the enactment of agency shop legislation in Pennsylvania, which was vital to workers as well as their families. We'll touch on that. We'll touch on wage theft, which is a huge issue in America today. And we'll also get into infrastructure. And it's so important that that money, which eventually is going to come from Washington, gets to the right areas. And back in June, Rick testified before the House of Representatives Subcommittee on the Environment. And he addressed what's often called the Forgotten America. The panel took a look at bringing jobs and wealth back to the Forgotten America. We're talking about Appalachia. There's so many areas of the country, and Pennsylvania has many areas like that. So does Ohio. So does Kentucky. So does West Virginia. And it's important that the money goes to those areas, goes to those families, so they can rejoin the middle class. That's what it's all about. So we'll touch on that. The other issue, and this is quite fascinating, a couple of months back, a water department worker in Pennsylvania was killed on the job. Okay, he works in the public sector. And this latest tragedy, once again, shined a light on the fact that some 500,000 Pennsylvania public sector workers do not have the same OSHA-like protection as all other workers in the state. And it turns out, for more than 30 years, the unions in Pennsylvania have been fighting for public sector OSHA. I didn't realize that. And it's probably not a bad idea to check all the other states in America to see what kind of protections they have. So Rick's going to touch on that. We have another Rick on the show. Later on, we'll hear from Rick Perdue. Rick is head of the Lima, Ohio building trades. And this is a story that's really sad. We're talking about 3,000 jobs in that area. And a couple months back, actually in the spring, Rick confirmed that the Lima refinery there, which is a big operation, they do these annual fall turnarounds, and they normally hire union construction workers. Well, guess what? They're not doing that. And guess what? This refinery, which has been around for 135 years, is under new ownership. It's a Canadian-based energy company, Cenovus, and they acquired Husky Energy back in January. And when you get the new guys in town, many of them do not understand what the trades do. And more often than not, they try to do it on the cheap. And it's kind of funny, too, because they said that this turnaround will be performed by turnaround specialists. Well, what did the trades do? They've been doing it for every year. Wouldn't you classify them as specialists? Rick's been working tirelessly to try to turn this around. And this has a huge impact. I mean, Lima's not a big city. When you got 3,000 construction jobs that disappear, that's going to have a major impact on that municipality. So we'll touch on that with Rick Perdue, head of the Lima, Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. The annual report on the finances of Social Security and Medicare came out yesterday. And Rick Fiesta, who's the executive director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, promptly issued a press release on what that report said. And he was pretty happy on at least one instance. He said Social Security remains strong and solvent with enough money to cover all payouts and expenses until 2033. So that's 12 years. That's if nothing is done. Keep that in mind. Here's the issue. Medicare Part A, that trust fund for hospital care, now has sufficient funds to cover its obligations until 2026. That's 5 years away. Rick said Americans have worked a lifetime to earn the Social Security and Medicare they rely on and should be confident that those benefits will be there for them. The best way to strengthen Social Security, he said, and he's talked about this on show many, many times, and that is to lift the cap on earnings subject to the 6.2% payroll tax, which is currently $142,800. So, if you make that, you pay into Social Security. I don't know how many in my listening audience are at $142,000 a year, but think about all the people that benefited from the tax cuts over the year. So, after they make $142,000, they don't pay into Social Security. That's it. That's why they want to scrap the cap. Regarding Medicare, Congress and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services should do more to ensure that insurance companies offering Medicare Advantage plans get their costs under control. He says these wealthy corporations, this is Fiesta speaking, made commitments to deliver healthcare services at a lower cost per beneficiary than traditional Medicare. Well, their failure to do so actually cost Medicare $7 billion in 2018 alone. The trustees also noted that Medicare Part D prescription drug costs continue to increase faster than the rate of inflation. Americans pay the highest prices in the world, and Congress must act now to lower those costs. Medicare must be allowed to negotiate lower prices for consumers and taxpayers. Well, there are several bills to address what we just talked about, and one of them is the Trust Act. That's in the Senate at 1295. That's the number of that bill. And in the House, it's House Resolution 2575. And these are issues that need to be discussed, especially when they get through this infrastructure deal and address whatever situations might be happening between now and the end of the year. Good news out of the Labor Department yesterday. The U.S. Department of Labor announced the establishment of the Office of Unemployment Insurance Modernization to provide strategic leadership as the department works with state agencies and federal partners to modernize and reform the unemployment insurance system. That system has been a disaster, and the pandemic cast a very bright light on that disaster. Ohio is a good example. There were billions of dollars of fraud. Florida, another example. Well, the new unit will develop and support implementation of the strategic vision outlined in the UI modernization plans, which were announced earlier in August, including unemployment insurance reform, oversight, and management of $2 billion in funds in the American Rescue Plan to prevent and detect fraud, promote equitable access, ensure timely benefit payments, and reduce backlogs. Operating within the Office of the Secretary of Labor, the Office of Unemployment Insurance Modernization will work closely and in conjunction with the Employment and Training Administration, the Office of the Chief Information Officer, and the Office of the Assistant Secretary for administration and management. Well, that is certainly good news coming from the Labor Department. In other news, the new Democratic majority on the National Labor Relations Board was cemented over the weekend when David Prouty was sworn in as the fifth and final member, replacing William Emanuel, whose term ended last Friday. So with a 3-2 majority taking effect, the Biden board is likely to hit the ground running and is expected to issue decisions that will help unions win elections, lose restrictions on expressing support for labor in the workplace, and tighten joint employment standards, among a host of other political changes. Now, here's the other part of the story. As management side attorney Emanuel vacated his seat last week, reports emerged that he was subject to a probe by the U.S. Department of Justice over possible ethics violations, namely allegations that Emanuel had improperly participated in several board cases involving companies in which he owns stock. Imagine that. According to Bloomberg, the DOJ decided not to pursue the case, which essentially put the matter back before the board itself, which now must decide how to handle the four prior rulings in which the NLRB Inspector General has determined that Emanuel had a conflict of interest that should have required his recusal. How about that? And one more here. Employees of Delta Airlines have increased their vaccination rate fivefold after the company imposed a $200 monthly fine on unvaccinated employees. I guess that got their attention. The monthly fine is administered through the employee's health care plan and activates for employees who are not vaccinated by November 1 of this year. The fine is an escalated attempt from Delta to convince the remaining 25% of their employees who have not gotten the vaccine to get vaccinated after they exhausted other incentives. Like I said, the $200 got their attention. All right, quick break. Coming up next, Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and that's also our Twitter handle, at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all part of the AFL-CIO. Before we get to Rick Bloomingdale from the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, I just want to mention that Kinsey Robinson, announced this week that he is stepping down as international president of the United Union of Roofers, Waterproofers, and Allied Workers. Not going to happen right away. He's stepping down in January, January 8th. He stated, after 55 years of membership and being afforded the unique privilege of serving in the capacity of a general officer for 37 years, it's now time to turn the reins of power over to a younger generation of leaders. Change is positive and necessary in order for new ideas and strategies to emerge so that our union may continue to grow and prosper. Upon Robinson's announcement, the union's International Executive Board elected current International Secretary Treasurer James Hadel to assume the position of president when Robinson leaves office. Again, that won't happen until January 8th. So congratulations to Kinsey Robinson. 55 years of membership. God bless him. A long time. All right, let's go to line number one. And welcome back to the show. It's been a couple of months since we checked in with this guy. Rick Bloomingdale is head of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, position he's had since 2010. Hey, Rick, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Thanks. Thanks very much. Doing great today, and afternoon to all your listeners, and looking forward to doing the show.
All right. Appreciate that. And this is just a series of shows where we check in with various states to see what's going on in their legislatures. You know, you always got the right to workers over there. People like to slam prevailing wage. Maybe we could pick up right there because wage theft is a huge issue, especially in the trades. And they bring in workers from out of state, and Pennsylvania is no exception. Maybe you could bring us up to speed. What's going on there, Rick?
Well, as you know, as you mentioned, prevailing, you know, theft of wages is a big issue. And it happens a lot in the building trades, but, you know, it happens a lot in non-union workplaces, especially in restaurants, where, you know, bosses will take tips and all those kind of things. So wage theft is a and it's, they especially prey on folks who, you know, immigrants and new Americans and folks who may not be familiar with the laws and get taken advantage of, or they can be very insidious. We just had a case here, and a contractor by the name of Haw Baker, big non-union outfit up in around Penn State, did a lot of work, got a lot of government contracts from Penn State, was not putting the money into the workers' 401ks. Of course, they're non-union, so they didn't have a defined benefit plan, but weren't putting money into the 401ks and putting it into their pockets. And, you know, a couple of workers went to retire and found the statements that they had been given for years were false, and the money wasn't there. So our attorney general, Josh Shapiro, took action, and in the biggest wage theft case in the nation, got sued him for $21 million and sent a couple of guys to jail, and in a first for usually these things are fines and penalties, but went after them and, made them pay, and they're supposed to pay restitution, and they pled guilty to the crime. And now those, hopefully those workers will be made whole. But, you know, one thing that you can't calculate is, you know, when you work over 30 and like the brother from the roofers, you know, you work that many years, you're going to miss out on all those returns from the stock market, because sure, that's typically where pension funds are invested. Because, you know, while it can be risky, it does good over time. And that's the beauty of a pension defined benefit. You know, individuals can may go up or down, but a fund will weather that because it's right. It's invested for the long haul. But at any rate, that's the kind of thing. And, we're now the Department of Labor and Industry has to be the department that does debarment. So we're hoping that Labor and Industry debars them from any future contracting for their egregious behavior. And for folks who don't know what debarment is, and it just means you are barred from doing work for the state government for a period of time, depending on the penalty. A contractor can be debarred for 6 months, a year, 5 years, and permanently in some cases, depending on the severity of the crime. And for this one, I would hope that they would be permanently debarred, but that decision is not up to me. It's up to our Department of Labor and Industry.
Rick, I'm so glad you brought this up, because it's important that when somebody breaks the law, and this is a clear example of it, they need to go to jail. They need to be kicked out of the state of Pennsylvania in this case, and we may find out that it's going to be permanent. I don't know. But over the years, it's been kind of lax when it comes to enforcing things like this. Contractors have been getting away with murder in so many cases. I mean, even when people die on the job, the fines are minuscule. You know that. I'm just wondering, do we see a turnaround here? I mean, being more aggressive on this. What's the case in Pennsylvania?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, and it depends. You know, everybody, and unfortunately, you know, you would hope that people, Pennsylvanians, Americans in general, would respect the rule of law, would respect our laws, and not break them because it's the wrong thing to do. Right. But they do break them. And you're right. They break it. They make a calculation whether or not they can afford it. OK, I stole 21 million or I stole, you know, or I hurt somebody on the job. I'm going to have to pay out $300 a week. But the equipment fix that caused the injury, that would have been $10,000. So it's cheaper for me to risk somebody getting hurt and roll those dice. Those are calculated. Instead of doing the right thing, they make a financial calculation on because the fines are so low, right? Especially for OSHA, right? A $500 or $600 fine or $5,000 fine in a multi-million-dollar business, that's nothing. Paying out workers' comp on a worker, a couple of years or 10, you know, whatever the severity of the injury, hopefully not death. But, you know, they make that calculation. Is it worth it to me to have an unsafe workplace or is it too expensive to have a safe workplace? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we always argue, you know, having a safe workplace leads to higher productivity, less training for new workers because you injure them. And, you know, and most businesses have made that calculation and decided that's true. Right. Which is why you see in a good union business and in some good non-union businesses, signs safety first, you know, 300 days without an accident. They safety meetings in the morning. You know, those are things that have been adapted by led by union companies, but adopted by non-union companies because they figured out that a safe workplace, a healthy workplace is a happy workplace. And injuries go down, productivity goes up. Unfortunately, they haven't made that calculation in the public sector in Pennsylvania. And I didn't know if you wanted to get into that right now, or it's seems like a great segue for that. But fines and penalties, your first point, are way too low to discourage illegal behavior, unfortunately. And it happens in organizing as well, right? A company violates the National Labor Relations Act and fires people illegally and all that. They make a calculation. Is this going to cost me, or I have to post a sign in the workplace that says, my bad, I won't do it again. Right. You know, that's one of the penalties. And, you know, back in the day, employers were embarrassed by having to do that and they didn't want to do it. Now it's just a financial kind of calculation.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Right. What's the cost of the contract versus me having to pay a $5,000 fine for breaking the law? And again, the sad point is that they don't respect the law, that they would rather break it. And they put a monetary value on what's right and wrong, which is a shame that some people in our country have come to that.
Well, Rick, since you touched on it, let's talk about the public sector and the lack of having a department of OSHA. And I was pretty shocked by this. I saw this on your website. By the way, the website for the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO is PA AFL-CIO.org. And we're speaking with Rick Bloomingdale, who's the president. And this involves a water department worker who was killed on the job. And it just shed a light on the fact that there's a 500,000 people in the state of Pennsylvania. That's just one state. 500,000 people that do not have the same OSHA-like protection as all other workers in the state. So you're in the public sector. You're working on the job. You get killed on the job. There's no agency to look into it. This is ridiculous. And I guess this has been a long time, 30 years you've been fighting this. What's the problem here? Why don't they start this, Rick? I don't get it.
The municipalities and the townships and all the local governments will tell you it's too expensive. Again, back to my point. Yeah. And they say they do safety anyway. But if they're doing safety, then why is it expensive? Right. That's the question. If you're already doing what you have to do under what would be, you know, a state-led OSHA office. And the way it works is you apply to the federal OSHA, and then you're allowed to use their rules and regulation. Because OSHA didn't cover, because the federal government typically doesn't require local governments. They really can't. They're federal. Federal laws are for federal agencies and so forth. So, but states can apply for OSHA coverage, right? And that's in, I think 22 states have done that. Pennsylvania is one that hasn't. And over since the passage of OSHA. So what happens then is you create your own OSHA department within the state and, you know, do the inspections and all that kind of stuff. So but you get those protections. And, you know, one of the examples I use all the time is City of Harrisburg, the trash collectors are city workers, right? They're in AFSCME, they're union members. Out in where I live, out in the suburbs and township, we have Waste Management, which is a private trash hauler. Right. Now, these guys have the same trucks. Now, and they're mostly guys, but the guy on the Waste Management truck is covered by OSHA. That guy in the city truck and picking up the trash is not covered by OSHA. Same equipment, same job, different employer. One has safety protections, one doesn't. It's just absurd. And, you know, what the people against it are saying, oh, my God, it'd be too expensive if we had to do all this. But then they tell you we run safe workplaces. Well, clearly at the water department, and we had, you know, and there are countless injuries but a number of deaths on the job. A few years back, a guy named Jake Schwab in Erie County was working on a bus with a faulty piece of equipment. If it had been Greyhound or a private sector bus company, they would have been covered by OSHA. Jake was killed by the equipment malfunctioning. And, you know, the city's the transportation department, the bus company, Erie Transportation Authority or whatever it's called, you know, they said, well, we'll do the investigation. Well, we know they didn't do a very good investigation. So, you know, Jake's family never got any kind of closure on, you know, this horrific accident that took his life. And, you know, that happens. We had a PennDOT worker killed in Blair County. Again, you know, private sector highway worker would have OSHA protections. That public sector highway worker doesn't. And, you know, just the injustice. And you can compare job to job to job in the private sector where, you know, they do better safety. Now, PennDOT, because, you know, a lot of these companies are agencies or unions, so they push for safety, but they don't have the framework, right? The OSHA framework to provide for good safety measures. They don't, you know, so it would bring a lot of uniformity for one. But, and again, you've safe workplace is going to lead to lower absenteeism and, you know, higher productivity.
Just amazing to me. I can only assume you're going to bring this up before the General Assembly again. I mean, it's been there many, many times.
We're trying to. Of course, then they say, "Well, how do we know how many accidents or how?" So we're saying, "Well, if you're really serious about it, you know, let's do a study and get these guys to report, you know, all these, you know, local governments. Tell us what kind of injuries you're having. So we get a sense of what's happening. You know, you claiming you're running safe workplaces. Well, what's your problem with reporting your accidents then? If they're exactly. so safe, it shouldn't be much work. So right. that's, you know, that's one of the things that we want to make as part of the OSHA law is that, you know, they have to report injuries so we can get a handle on how we help them make their workplaces safer.
Rick Bloomingdale, who's president of the State Labor Federation in Pennsylvania, is joining us on our live line. We'll continue our conversation with him. More to talk about, especially dealing with infrastructure funds. Rick Perdue will be joining us later in the show. Rick is head of the building trades in Lima, Ohio, and they're trying to save some jobs dealing with a Lima refinery. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Rick Bloomingdale. Rick's president, Pennsylvania AFL-CIO. Hey, Rick, fill me in here. Did I hear that some of your lawmakers in the state want to do a recount on last November's election because they claim there was fraud? Can you bring me up to speed on that?
Yeah, they've since Joe Biden won by 88,000 votes, they decided somehow that, you know, in the 9,000 some odd precincts that we have with three or four workers per precinct, an elected judge of elections, somehow those 30,000 hardworking Pennsylvanians who mostly volunteer to work on election day, they get $100, I think, or $150 to put in 14 hours to run our elections. If somehow these, thousands of workers who've been doing this for many years, by the way, without any fraud or abuse or theft, all of a sudden, these 30,000 some workers conspired to reelect a bunch of Republicans, but then take out Donald Trump and instead of getting rid of all the Republicans, they just focused on Trump. So, yeah, they've called for a review and they a forensic review. They haven't quite used the word audit yet because they don't want to be ridiculed like Arizona, although they're on their path on the path that way. But
sure.
They really made, what is it, 9 months after the election and they still haven't figured out how to count.
They won't give up, though. Let's talk about infrastructure here. And I saw your comments on your website. Rick testified back in June. before the House of Representatives Subcommittee on the Environment, and the panel had a really interesting topic. It was called Jumpstarting Main Street, Bringing Jobs and Wealth Back to Forgotten America. And there's a lot of parts of America that are truly forgotten. Appalachia is a good example in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, parts of Ohio. And it just seems that these are areas that are so often ignored, especially when you got federal money. And there's all kind of money coming. You got the American Rescue Plan. We've got the infrastructure deal. You know something's going to happen. And it's going to translate to good family-sustaining jobs. Can you kind of go over that with us, Rick, and make sure that as the head of the state federation, we got to help those parts out and bring those people out of poverty? What was your response when you testified on that?
Well, you know, and it's not just Appalachia, as you mentioned. There are lots of areas of the U.S. that have been hollowed out. You know, they were one big company towns. They were all built around an industry. In particular, you know, in Appalachia, it's coal mining, steel making, big manufacturing, big union jobs.
Yeah.
And as those industries changed and moved and shut down, what you saw was no replacement, right? You'd see the dollar stores and the Walmarts pop up. So you'd go from a, you know, $25 an hour job or $30 an hour job to a $10 an hour job. And, you know, as a result, right, you lived at $30 an hour and all of a sudden you're making 10. So, you know, you got to sell the house. You maybe only have one car now. Which then leads to say folks are married, they both have to work. Now there's no mass transit in rural America, or some, but not a lot in rural America. And, you know, so you get into this downward spiral and you can see it if you drive through, parts of our country where, you know, once thriving communities have just been, you know, you see main streets boarded up. And, you know, this has been going on in Pennsylvania, at least since the collapse of the steel industry in the late, you know, 70s and 80s. And it's just and there's been no reinvestment, no way to like, OK, we've got these really great workers who really knew how to, you know, get to work, put in a good day's work, make a great product. And all of a sudden, you know, we left it to the Walmarts and the dollar stores. And those are all, look, all that stuff's necessary, right? That stuff grows up when you have a base industry, mm-hmm. when you have a power plant or you have a coal mine. We never invested. We never said, okay, we lost the steel industry, but what's next? What can we do in, you know, some parts of, like I said, not just Appalachia, that's been an area in it because it covers like 13 states, you know, so it's a big part of America, but it just the lack of investment, so you got kids, what we found during the pandemic is, you know, everybody had to go to remote learning. We didn't have great, you know, reliable broadband in so much of our, of rural America because it didn't make sense financially for Verizon or AT&T or whoever to wire rural America. And, you know, instead of doing like we did in the 30s, which was, you know, you went to Ma Bell and the government said, you got to wire every house in America and we're going to guarantee you a rate of return so it's profitable for you. And they went and they wired every home in America. You know, now we just say, well, good luck. And, you know, we're not going to work with the companies to build out the kinds of infrastructure that we need. And because the government, they can't do the broadband, but the private companies can. But mm-hmm. they also have to make a profit. That's why they're in business.
Right.
So it has to be that investment again and that partnership with some of our corporations that provide those kind of utility-like services, make sure that they can turn a profit, but also make sure that every home in America has reliable high-speed broadband. So, with the internet now, folks can build a business anywhere in America. They don't have to be in Silicon Valley or New York City or Philadelphia. You know, they can be in Washington, PA or Beaver Falls or any of the small towns that used to have big steel mills. You know, folks can, they're creative. They can come up with a business model. And, you know, you give them the broadband and they're going to start building businesses. So it's really important that we invest in those places that we've left behind.
The infrastructure bill, this is the bipartisan deal that is working its way through the House, I understand. At last report, there was like $65 billion for broadband. So that's definitely a jump start. It's not, by all means, going to solve the problems that we're talking about, but at least it's moving in the right direction. Rick, I know you got to go to a meeting. I'm going to button it up there. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Let's do this like every 3-4 months just to check in. I'd like to talk to you maybe toward the end of the year on organizing, because you mentioned a lot of those jobs, like Bethlehem Steel. Let's use that as an example. They closed down years ago. But the jobs that replace them are non-union, Walmarts, the Amazons, and we're seeing pockets of organizing in those sectors. And it's been pretty profound, especially during the pandemic. We're seeing more and more of it, so maybe we could touch on that. So you take care. Absolutely. Stay safe. And by the way, have a great Labor Day coming up. You're doing a great job over there in the state of Pennsylvania, okay?
Well, thank you very much. And it's always a pleasure to be on the show and look forward to doing it again.
You got it. Rick Bloomingdale, president of the Pennsylvania State Labor Federation. You can find more at PAAFLCIO.org. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Rick Perdue heads the building trades in Lima, Ohio. He's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. I've been saying on this show so many times that Wall Street has really ruined and hollowed out America. You've got these hedge funds that come in, they buy companies, distressed companies often, and they force workers out. They cut the payroll, fire everybody. Here's a perfect example. I'm going to go to Lima, Ohio right now, and joining us on line number two is Rick Perdue. And Rick heads the Lima Building Trades. LimaBuildingTrades.com is their website. And what happened essentially is a refinery, big refinery. And every year they do this, what's called a turnaround at the refinery, and they hire union brothers and sisters, construction workers, to deal with that. This time, they are going the non-union route. Rick Perdue, welcome to the show. What's going, in your words, what's going on here? Now, this firm has been, 135 years? Everything's going fine, and all of a sudden, Wall Street comes in there and says, we got to do it differently? Is that what's happening?
Well, when we had this discussion earlier in this year, when he said that they were going to be bringing 3,000 workers from out of state, it was a total shock. We were doing this meeting by Zoom, and, everybody's mouth just dropped. We weren't expecting that. We don't, when these turnarounds happen, there might be some non-union sectors there, but usually, there's a big portion of the work that all goes union that we have. We have crafts companies that are in there, all year round that have been maintaining this plant. And for them to come into a meeting and just catch us totally off guard, it was a big shock to us. And, hopefully we can get some people out there.
When they do the turnaround, maybe you could explain to our listeners, and this is, I guess, an annual process, what actually happens with that turnaround?
What happens in the turnaround is they go into certain parts of the plant that things are wore out, and they go in and, rebuild, repair, put in new material, new machinery, new pumps, whatever it takes, to keep that plant going, because every day they're down, we know that costs millions of dollars. So, they're just trying to keep everything going. So they have one big turnaround a year that usually those turnarounds are the time that they're down is like 30 days to 45 days, could be even longer. But you have a pre-turnaround, and then you have the closing after the turnaround, to finish up and, tear everything down. You have the setup, the turnaround, and then the closing of it, the firing up, back up of the machinery.
Mm-hmm. And when is this scheduled to start?
Here in September.
All right, so right around the corner then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've been in negotiations with the new owners here, and how's that been going so far?
Myself and Mike Nisley, he's with the State Building Trades. We were meeting with them earlier. There was no real changing of their minds. Their mind is set. This is the path that they're going down. But, we still have to meet with them because we've been, we've been in the eye out there for a long time, and we've been rebuilding and maintaining that plant for a long time. So we need to stay in their sight to where, we're not forgotten, We don't want people coming from out of state, coming in here, making some money and leaving. We're here to support the community and our members that live around the community. And with an hour of the plant, that's what it's all about, is just supporting our local community.
Right, right. Yeah, you get rid of 3,000 jobs, it's going to have a huge impact on any city, and Lima is not a big city. Let's be honest here. I got to talk about safety here. I'm just concerned, and there's got to be other people kind of raising their eyebrows now when you're bringing in workers, and the company is saying these guys are specialists, like you're not a specialist, right? They're bringing in non-union people. I have to wonder, and we're dealing with oil and gas. I mean, this is dangerous stuff here. What assurances are they saying about safety, about training for these workers? Have they addressed that?
Well, that question has been brought up numerous times, and you ask about what are we doing? Are we meeting with them? And we have been meeting with the plant. We're taking them around now and showing them, the locals. We visit the plumbers and the pipe fitters, the electricians, the boilermakers, and the carpenters. We've visited all these apprenticeship schools where we send our members that get trained. And day one, that's one thing that's big, is safety training starts whenever an apprentice starts. So they're being put out on the job side also as well with somebody that's been there for a while, that's been trained, that knows a lot of the aspects. And when we're looking at the people that's coming in here, you know, 3,000 people is a lot of people to bring into one place, and they're talking about A players, and I really don't see them doing that. With them bringing in that many people, you know they're going to have to hire some people off the street that's not going to have any training whatsoever. You know, we've seen ads where they're asking, you know, for people to come to work, offering them so much money. But safety is a big factor because from what I hear, a guy could be, let's just say, building a scaffold one day and over here welding pipe the next day. You know, is he certified in both of those? That's what's great about the skilled trades. There's people, all members are skilled, and they have the certifications to do the jobs that what they can, you know, what they're specialized in. And, you know, is it going to be the same for the people coming in? Because I know when our guys out there, when they're testing for welding, if they don't pass, you know, they're gone. So mm-hmm. is that going to be the same scenario out there for them? I don't know.
Scary situation, no doubt. Very, very scary. What are the locals saying about this? I mean, there's got to be some people on the political side that are concerned about the safety of their community when you have non-union people, when you have people that are not properly trained dealing with a refinery on the job. There's got to be some outcry. Let me put it that way. Is that happening?
Oh yeah, we've had some informational pickets, and we've had some good politicians come. Tim Ryan has came and spoke. You know, he's backing us. We have Nan Whaley. She's the mayor of Dayton. She's going to be running for governor. She has came up and spoke. The mayor of Lima, Dave Berger. He's been a constant. You know. He's right there with us, you know. He knows what that refinery is all about. He's been the mayor there for a long time. And we've reached out to other politicians, too. Sherrod Brown has sent a letter to the refinery. You know, their terms are they're looking at hiring these people that their safety, their turnaround specialists. But you know what? So is our members. They've been maintaining and building that plant for many, many years, and it's went on for generations. You know, I can talk to a few people that's 2-3 generations deep, that's their family has worked in that plant. So if you want to talk about safety and, you know, experience, we've got that all the way.
Well, it's so unfortunate. And again, I go back to these buyout specialists on Wall Street, and apparently this is a company based in Canada, Cenovus Energy, formerly acquired Husky Energy. This happened back in January, and it didn't take them very long to announce that 3,000 jobs normally, and for a year, over 100 years, performed by the building trades members, all of a sudden, it's going to be non-union, out-of-state construction workers. That's not the right recipe for America. I'm sorry. Well, you hang in there, my brother. How are the members? Are they holding up okay right now? I mean, this has got to be tough for them.
There's a lot of, you know, everybody's being, how you want to say, they're being, I don't want to say considerate, because a lot of people are upset over it. I mean, that's work. That's a lot of, you're talking millions of dollars and a lot of man hours that's going to, you know, come into that town and leave. It's not going to stay there to support that town. And, you know, that could mean for our members, you know, that could mean whether they qualify for unemployment or not, because, you know, things have been kind of slow this year for some of the crafts, and, you know, people are having to travel to go find work. And, you know, when you can't do this job that's right here in your own backyard, that makes it tough on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you hang in there, my brother. Rick Perdue is head of the Lima Building Trades. LimaBuildingTrades.com is their website. Stay strong, my brother. Keep in touch with us on this issue, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, it's Kelly and Ferraro, the trial attorneys, and Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.